Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. A lot to talk about on this Thursday edition. Are you worried about clown attacks? Some people are. But now the clowns are getting attacked. We'll have details about that. State of Georgia, they're demanding that a minister turns over his sermon notes. Pretty interesting. We'll have the details about that story. And also, are Trump supporters turning on the media? Some in the media think that they are, and they're worried about it. We'll have more details about that and a few other stories on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And this is Trumpet Radio Live. This is the Thursday edition. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, returned from hiatus.
I'm back.
Back and ready for action. And, of course, you're a happy guy for a lot of reasons, but one of them is that the Golden State Warriors lost their first game. And then the Thunder won their opener last night, so you're pleased.
Well, yeah. Kevin Durant's 0-1 and Russell Westbrook's 1-0. I hate to get any sort of joy from a specific team losing, but I just feel like after Durant has repeatedly taken shots at the Thunder since he left, he kind of deserved to get walloped like he did in his first game.
I tell you, that's going to be quite the dramatic game when the Thunder and Golden State meet up.
Next Thursday is their first one already.
Is it next Thursday?
But that's
already
on the road. They don't play in Oklahoma City until February, I think.
Okay. Well, that's going to be high drama. NBA loves that. They like to see a little bit of back and forth. I saw yesterday they were trying to get Westbrook to comment on Golden State's first game.
And he's like, so funny.
He's like, nah, didn't see it. Nah, don't know what happened. And so he didn't take the bait.
Well, did you hear all of what they were asking him, if he watched any basketball or if he saw any highlights? And he kept saying no. And they're like, well, did you watch the World Series? And he said no. He's like, I had a good dinner. I was talking on the phone with my wife, took a shower, used Dove soap, right, which I think is one of his sponsors. And then I went to bed, but before I went to bed, I turned on a movie. So he was telling all these unnecessary details because they kept asking what he was doing while Durant was failing on the Warriors.
Yeah, they want to get the controversy stirred up. last night was the opening night for quite a few NBA teams. Anthony Davis was a really good young player. He plays what are they now?
They call them the Pelicans now.
The Pelicans now.
New Orleans.
Yeah. I had one of those brain lapses.
It's like, hard to remember.
What is that team? Yeah, okay.
Because they used to be the Hornets.
Right.
But now
the Hornets went back to Charlotte.
The former Charlotte Bobcats are now the Hornets.
Right.
So that little cycle gets me so confused.
Right. Yeah, I should have wrote that down, but I thought I would remember. Then I was like, wait a second. What team? What's the name of that team again? Anyway, Anthony Davis for the Pelicans. He had a huge night last night. The team still lost, but he had 50 points, 16 rebounds, 7 steals, 5 assists, 4 block shots in 41 minutes. He joins Wilt Chamberlain, Elgin Baylor, and Michael Jordan as just the fourth player in NBA history to score 50 points in a season opener. So he almost hit the unprecedented 5x5, where you get at least 5 in 5 different categories.
Mm.
But the fact that he scored 50 points, that should be, you could get 5 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 5 blocks. That'd be neat, but 50 points, and that's a lot. So.
Yeah, you could donate some of those 50 points to the other categories to even them all out.
Shift them around. So he played great, but the team lost, unfortunately. So that's got to be a tough one in the locker room. You're like, guys, you know, what else do you need from me here?
Yeah, he scored half their points.
I need a little bit of help. So anyway, kind of interesting with the NBA season getting going, and then, of course, World Series is going on, tied up 1-1. And interesting. It's always amazing to me that they play baseball so late into the year. It's cold. There's one guy last night, I think he was, I don't remember if he was on the Indians or the Cubs, but he had like a complete face mask on.
Right.
I didn't even know that was illegal. He looked like he was hiding his identity, but he must have been cold. The temperature was about, I think it was in the 40s, but he didn't like it.
Right, yeah. Well, they're playing in Chicago and in Cleveland this year. So cities up north, pretty close to a couple different lakes. So they're getting a lot of cold weather off the lake.
Yeah, have to deal with that in the World Series play. Of course, one of the things that's been going on in the news here recently, it's a silly thing, but it's just it's been in the news, is these clowns, people dressing up like clowns and trying to scare people. Sometimes that backfires, though, because the person you're scaring might come after you. And this happened. There's the video online. This man was dressing as a clown and trying to scare people. And, of course, they like to film it, and then they put it up on YouTube and, you know, get their views. Well, he jumped up to scare one guy, and the guy pulled a gun out and pistol whipped the clown. So, not that that's a good thing to have happen, but he did, it was in Northern California, and so he was able to scare a few people. Then the last guy was like, "Nope," and the clown started running, and the guy chased him a little bit. So, it's not a good idea to try to jump out and scare people, and sometimes it really has pretty serious consequences.
Right, I've seen a few videos like that, including one where there was a guy dressed in a gorilla costume, and he was hiding in a recycling bin in a school hallway, and he'd been jumping out and scaring people all day, but finally he did it to the wrong guy, this big, strong black guy, and the black guy turned around and punched him right in the face because he was just scared, and that was his first reaction when the gorilla popped out at him. So you don't want to mess with the wrong people.
No, you have to be careful. There, a couple years ago in the neighborhood that I live in, there were some teens that were going around trying to prank people. I don't know if they lived there or if they were from a surrounding area, but they were going around trying to scare people. And I found out from one of my neighbors, what they did is, middle of the night, what they would do is they go around, and people usually have like a glass storm door and then like their main door in their homes. And so what they did was they put firecrackers in between those two, ring the doorbell, and then light them off. And so the guy, my neighbor, he went and he opened the door and he just sees hears these pops and sees it all. He thought he was getting shot.
Wow.
Now, you know, nothing happened. He was scared, obviously, the people took off. But, you know, you don't know. Things like that, they're just terrible ideas anyway. But you don't know what that homeowner could do or what somebody could do, just even out of fear, like you said. They get scared, and if they think you're attacking them or they don't know what's happening, you could have a pretty serious problem. And then what would you do? I mean, you couldn't. It's kind of your fault, you know. So anyway, some of those pranks, I guess, in some level are funny, but they can be pretty foolish in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, it is becoming more foolish now since this is really a more and more dangerous society, more than we've ever really seen. We just keep hearing crazier and crazier ways of people committing violence against each other. So when people are on guard or paranoid about that at all, and you're pulling off a prank that could make it seem like you're about to attack them, they could respond accordingly, and that wouldn't necessarily work out very well. That does remind me of one of these commercials I saw recently, Progressive Insurance. They put out a commercial where basically they're acting like teenagers who play pranks in a neighborhood. You know how sometimes they'll knock over a mailbox or they'll leave a paper bag on the front doorstep.
Yeah.
But what the progressive people were doing was fixing all the mailboxes. They were putting bricks back up in the chimney instead of taking the bricks out. They put a paper bag full of money on the doorstep. and then the guy was like, "Progressive forever," when he ran down the street away from the doorbell.
They were positively pranking people. Right. That's actually pretty good. Pretty clever commercial.
It cracked me up.
Yeah. There's some good ones out there from time to time. This is an interesting story. There is in South Carolina, they say a wild elk has been spotted roaming the woodlands there. It's the first time they've seen one in more than 200 years. So where did he come from? He's just roaming around out there. News outlets report that wildlife biologists are warning upstate residents and tourists to stay away from a young bull elk that was seen in several places in Pickens County over the weekend. In response to social media posts showing people feeding the animal, boy, I would stay away from him, a big guy. North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission biologist Justin McVie warned the public that the animal can cause serious injuries. So stay away from him if you see him up there. But that's pretty fascinating. They haven't seen one there in more than 200 years. And all of a sudden there's some bull elk roaming around. You have to wonder where he came from. I guess he just traveled from somewhere else and decided, hey, I'm going to hang out here for a while.
That's not an animal I would think of being in North Carolina, so it might have made a solitary migration, or maybe it got out of the back of a zoo van and before it got dropped off at the zoo.
Do they have elk at the
Probably
zoo?
Not, but it seems like people are very intrigued by it, so maybe it's worth putting in the zoo.
Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how they would actually know that it hadn't been there in 200 years, I guess. They just haven't had an official report. They could have been hiding out.
Yeah, there's plenty of people who see things and say, oh, that's interesting, and they don't tell everyone that they saw it.
Yeah. In some places, you haven't seen Bigfoot in 200 years. And then he pops up every once in a while on social media. Somebody
Those
sees
are
Bigfoot.
Other funny commercials. Don't mess with Sasquatch. Those,
all right.
Those Jack Links commercials.
Yeah, those are funny. And the as if anyone would mess. You know, if you saw a Bigfoot, not that I think they exist, but if you did see something like that, my first instinct wouldn't be to mess with it.
Right.
You know, like, hey, let's play a trick on
From
this.
Like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And then turn to your friends and laugh while he's getting really angry 10 feet away from you. Not a good idea.
That's the brilliance. All. The brilliance of those commercials are just so ridiculous that you remember them all these years later. Those are some of my favorite ones. You ever go to Arby's? You like going to Arby's?
I like it.
They're kind of famous for their roast beef. They have that commercial where they say, we have the meats.
More good commercials.
Yeah.
I love those ones too.
And the guy is always, he sounds angry, the voice guy, you know, but in a good way. They're funny commercials. Well, they're trying to mix it up a little bit. Arby's, they're best known right now for their sliced roast beef, but this fall, the chain is taking its We Have the Meats slogan pretty seriously. Not that I thought they were kidding around, but now they're taking it seriously. On Tuesday, the Atlanta-based company announced that it will begin testing venison, that's a deer meat, of course, venison sandwiches in select markets at the end of October. So be on the lookout. Don't know which markets, but you might get some venison. Have you ever had venison?
Oh, it must have probably been only once or twice, if ever. Yeah, not too often.
I was thinking about that myself, and I think I probably have at some point. I don't recall it specifically, and so I don't know. I don't know if this will be a good selling thing for them or not. They say the new sandwich is a thick-cut venison steak made from top and bottom round steaks from the hind quarter of the deer, topped with crispy onions and sweet tart berry sauce. So I don't know if they're trying to like make it like a Thanksgiving-ish sort
That's
of thing.
What it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. So end of October, it's getting around that fall time. People do go hunting, and I guess if you don't want to go hunting but you like venison, just go to Arby's. They've got more meats.
Right.
That'll have to be their new slogan.
Their spokesman is just, or the voiceover guy is just incredible on those commercials.
Yeah.
There was one where I guess he was bragging about how they put several different kinds of meat on one sandwich, and he's like, ooh, you're in trouble.
Yeah, he sounds like James Earl Jones to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine he'd be doing Arby's commercials, but I don't know. The guy sounds like him. I'll have to look and see who that actually is. But yeah, he is very funny. They have some funny commercials there for Arby's. But you might want to check that out if you're tired of just the same old roast beef and burgers. Now you can get venison. Sometimes they try to do buffalo too, some places, buffalo burgers.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to get past that fast food branding, you know, whenever they put out more quality items. It's kind of harder to call a place that has a venison sandwich a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, I can't recall a place that would have a venison sandwich, but I'm sure they're out there. Mm-hmm. But Arby's is jumping on board with that. And those that are a little more health conscious, they say they're going to be from some sort of a free-range farm or something. So that'll...
That makes a big difference to a lot of people.
It does.
I don't know what free-range really entails in terms of health benefits, but apparently it's a pretty big deal. Just considering people's reaction to it.
Yeah, I guess the idea is that they let them kind of roam around sort of naturally as opposed to jamming them in a
stall. So if they're not
stall.
Confined, they would just obviously be more healthy that way.
Yeah, I think so. There's a funny show that I've seen where they make fun of some of those people that are very serious about that. And they were ordering a chicken and they kept asking if it was local and if it was free range and all that. So it was very funny, and they just kept asking the same question over and over again. And the main guy said, I'm going to ask you one more time. Is it local? I'm going to ask you one more time. So every time we're at the store, we did this happened the other day. We were shopping, and my wife and I, and there was a sign that said local. I said, I'm going to ask you one more time. Is this local?
The woman at the on that show said, I think she asked if it was local, and the guy's like, and I was going to ask the same thing. Is it local?
Right. He couldn't get it out for some reason. So we'll leave the show nameless, but you might know what we're talking about there. Some not always great, but some humorous bits. Just poking fun at some of the things you see, the extreme things. And I'm going to ask you one more time. Is it local? The Trump Radio Live is local, by the way.
It is.
This is a local
show. It's
all
natural.
And it's free range. We're not penned up. We could do this from anywhere. Although we are in kind of a room of a specific proportion.
We are
right
somewhat
now
enclosed.
Yeah. But maybe that'll be something we'll do in the future, more free range of programming here on KPCG. We have programs from all over. We have programs from, they come from England. We're going to have some coming from Jerusalem. So we are free range. We're globally ranged.
That's really impressive. It should be, at least.
Yeah. And some local programming, too. This is an interesting story. It'd be interesting to see just how this type of thinking progresses. This is from Fox News. State of Georgia demands pastor turn over sermons. So there has been some talk, I guess, about what people can say and not say, even in religious services, especially, I guess, if they're open to the public.
Oh, right.
But so this is in state of Georgia. There's a few things to it we'll talk about here. It says a lay minister is suing the Georgia Department of Public Health for religious discrimination. He's been ordered by the state attorneys general to relinquish his sermons to the government, according to federal court documents. Please produce a copy of your sermon notes and or transcripts, Attorney General Samuel Olens wrote to attorneys representing Dr. Eric Walsh. Dr. Walsh said he will comply with the request. No government has the right to require a pastor to turn over his sermons. Walsh said, I cannot and will not give up sermons unless I am forced to do so. I guess he said he will not comply. That's what he said. So he's not going to unless he is forced to do so. He is a Seventh-day Adventist lay minister, and he'd been hired in May 2014 by a district health director with the Georgia Department of Public Health. That was the job he was taking. A week later, a government official asked him to submit copies of his sermons for review. He complied, and then 2 days later, he was fired. So he was hired on as a district health director with the Georgia Department of Public Health, and then they wanted to see what he had been giving in sermons. I don't know how they would even know he was speaking, but somehow they did. They didn't like what he said in there, and so they fired him. So it's kind of got a few layers to it because he was a public or a government employee, I guess. And so it's not like they just came busting in and said, hey, what are you saying, and you're in trouble. It was because of his job at the time. But it still is interesting, and I don't know if it'll set a precedent. You know, does it matter what he said in a church? Does it relate to his job at all? Interesting questions there.
It's one of those complicated issues where probably in this case they were technically within their bounds to fire him. But at the same time, whenever you go to a certain church and, you know, it's a certain denomination, whenever that preacher starts talking about the denomination and what those beliefs are, you shouldn't be able to get in trouble for that. I think Christians are just so extremely persecuted today, and it's not as if any minister out there is saying, you know, in the case of maybe homosexuality, that's a hot button issue where a lot of people say Christians are persecuting the homosexuals. Well, I don't know of any pastor who is telling his congregation, you know, give them dirty looks all you can and make them feel like a subspecies or something like that. But what the biblical teaching is that a lot of churches would preach is that homosexuality is a sin. It's almost like if someone went up there and said, well, we don't agree with smoking. We think it has some certain health disadvantages. That doesn't mean you go out and you persecute anyone who smokes, but you might just not disagree with it, and you'd keep that belief to yourself.
Yeah, his attorneys said that the government was curious about sermons that Dr. Walsh delivered on the topics of health, marriage, sexuality, world religions, science, and creationism. He also preached on what the Bible says regarding homosexuality. So those were the things that they were interested in. He has since filed a federal lawsuit charging state officials with engaging in religious discrimination. His attorney says he was fired for something he said in a sermon. If the government is allowed to fire someone over what he said in his sermons, they can come after any of us for our beliefs on anything. And so that's kind of the stance that Dr. Walsh and his attorneys are taking. And you can see it. You can see their point of view. I mean, it could be a pretty slippery slope. At what point do you, you know, where does that stop? I mean, even people do all kinds of jobs and then they go home and they have other interests, do other things. Do people start going into their private lives and seeing what they're doing? I mean, if it's affecting their job, okay. I mean, fair enough, because you are employed to do a certain task. But if it's completely unrelated to what you're doing at work and it has nothing to do with it, why is that an issue if it's not breaking the law or something like that? So that's where it gets a little slippery. Like, how much power does even an employer have to say you can do this and you can't do that when it's not related to the work?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the same issue with what if an employer didn't have a high opinion of Trump supporters, for instance. Could you just fire someone for the same reason? If not, then why are you firing someone for religious beliefs that aren't hurting anybody else? We are supposed to have certain liberties in this society. We are supposed to be able to say certain things or express what we believe without being persecuted. There is a such thing as hate speech, but it's not what is generally branded as hate speech today. Just because you disagree with a certain topic does not make it hate speech. But if you are inciting wrath toward a particular group of people, then it is. There is a distinction there that people are forgetting about.
Dr. Walsh has assembled a powerhouse legal team comprised of Parks, Chesson, and Walvert, along with First Liberty Institute, one of the nation's most prominent religious liberty law firms. They say it's an incredible intrusion on the sanctity of the pulpit. This is probably the most invasive reach into the pulpit by the state that I've ever seen. Neither the Attorney General nor his communication director responded to telephone calls or email correspondence. And so it's kind of an interesting situation that's going on there. They say pastors and rabbis across the country, especially in the state of Georgia, should be frightened that a state would demand all the sermon notes and transcripts of a pastor. The lawyer said this is unprecedented. So, pretty interesting. I mean, we all have notes of some kind, right? I mean, if you went to class, school, college, or something, you've taken notes or notes on a topic you're interested in. No matter what it is, I wouldn't want somebody coming in and saying, "Let me look at your notes."
Right.
Well, they're personal. I wrote something down I was thinking about. You know, it's like, I don't know, they come in and ask for your diary or something. Not that I keep one, but if I did, you know, I'd be like, well, it's my private business. So it is interesting. And a lot of times these cases sort of set precedent one way or the other. So it'd be interesting to keep up with it and see what happens.
Yeah, this is really a slippery slope, because if you can, in a way, they are persecuting this man for his religious beliefs. There's no real way around that. What else could you persecute? I mean, it seems like I've read plenty of vile things online in a columnist's piece, and I don't think I have the authority. I don't think the government has the authority to go out and persecute that person or get him fired. So it does make me wonder, where does this stop? If the government can disagree with something that you believe, I disagree with plenty of things, and the people who I disagree with probably disagree with me in a lot of ways as well. But if we're allowed to get each other fired or persecute each other over those things, then free speech is gone.
Yeah, and if you look at, say, some pretty notorious regimes historically, like the Nazis and so forth, well, there was a lot of pressure there. What do you think? You know, you have to agree with certain ideologies, political stances, or religious stances, and if not, then you're going to lose your job, and even worse at times. So interesting to see that happen, and again, there's always been that kind of separation where people could go to a church of their choice and listen to what they want to listen to. If they don't like it, they don't have to go there. But now they're starting to get in their mettle a little bit. So
there is also an increasing perception that the government has become anti-God, where it's not just separate from religion, but it's against religion. Cases like that really do not help ease anyone's mind about that type of an issue.
Well, right. And then, I mean, I think even some of the comments on the article, they said, well, you know, look, if somebody is preaching what the Bible says, they seem to get more trouble for it. But, you know, on the other side of it, there's all kinds of different religions that preach all kinds of different things, and some of them are pretty volatile, and they don't seem to have any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But if it gets to the Bible and what the Bible says, then it gets to be a real issue, and I think that's the thing that gets some people upset, and rightfully so.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not as if they're persecuting everyone who speaks from their own book. It's just people who speak from the Bible, not from the Quran or any other religious book. If you're going to single out one religion, well, really, you should just persecute all of them or none of them. Pick one of the two.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what happens there. This is an interesting story here from, of course, this is happening. People like to post reviews of things online, and sometimes people agree with the reviews. Other times they get very angry with them. They don't agree with the reviews. This is in relation to a bodega in New York City. They have a cat there, and it's like a little grocery store. And so this lady goes in, and she sees a cat sleeping on top of the Bud Light. There's a bunch of Bud Light in the middle of the store, and there's a cat sleeping on top of it. So this upset her. So she went on Yelp, where you can post reviews. And she says, I've ordered from this store before, and the sandwiches are pretty good. Now, she only gave them 1 star, so it was really low rating. Today, she says, however, I decided to stop in and grab a sandwich. To my dismay, there was a cat perched upon some cases of Budweiser in the middle of the store. Besides being allergic to cats, I wonder what the health code says about this. I guess she was thinking people would agree with her. Oh, contraire. People hated what she said. They love the bodega cat. Don't attack the bodega cat. Some of the comments were, get out of here. A bodega cat is like a bank without rent-a-cops, like a club with no bouncer. They said they need the cats because otherwise the rats will be there.
Oh, okay.
And so that's what the issue is. And then someone else said they were pro-cat and they want the bodega cat for president. So they were upset about it. And then another person says, maybe we need cats in the subways to catch the notorious rats down there. They are so brazen, you see them hauling slices of pizza. So New York City apparently has a pretty big rat issue. And so people are putting cats in these stores. I guess they've been doing it for some time. But it's offending some, and then other people love the cats and want them to stay because they catch the mice and the rats. So it's kind of a toss-up. I think I'd rather have the cat than the rat.
Oh, yeah, by far. I'm allergic to cats, too. But knowing that there's a huge rat problem at a place like that, the cat is preferable. Also, have you ever noticed that on these websites, either everything is 5 stars or 1 star, and you don't see many 2, 3, or 4 star reviews?
That's true. It's a matter of extremes. They say that if you get caught with a bodega cat, fines could be between $300 to $2,000. However, a fine for rodents can be $300 fine. So you're going to get fined one way or the other, whether you've got the cat or whether you've got the rat.
Wow.
So it'd be interesting to see. People that like cats really like cats. I mean, it's a serious matter for them. So they like to. Here's a picture right here I can show you. That's the cat sleeping up on the. There he is.
That's just odd to me that you'd have it in a store like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, that's a big thing in New York City because of the rat problem. So this one lady didn't like it, but other people really do like it. But I guess if you're allergic to them, that would be a problem. And you said you are allergic. So what happens to you?
Well, I don't have too big of a problem because I just basically have to touch the cat and then touch my face, mm-hmm. or touch a place where a cat has been a lot and then accidentally touch my face. And then it kind of just swells up. Mostly my eyes actually swell up and get really itchy. I pretty much deal with it now. Doesn't really affect me too much, but it still happens.
Yeah, we've got a cat at our place, and I always tell my kids, I'm like, you look at this guy. To us, he's just this fuzzy cat. But to a smaller animal like a mouse or a rat, this is a killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
He would be terrified to see this thing.
Well, yeah, the Black Plague started because people killed off all the cats, and look what happened. Yeah. The cats are a formidable force that could have prevented 25% of the world's population from dying.
Yeah, it looks like most of the food in this store from the picture is all sealed in jars. I don't think the cat's eating and drinking out of them. But anyway, kind of interesting situation there. It's just something I never really thought much about, but it is an issue for some people. Kia David programs coming up today here on KPCG. One of the programs is on the what Christ is doing now. That's a very good question that a lot of people probably are asking. Every year when we have the presidential campaigns, there's always some people that put up signs that say, you know, who would Christ vote for, or Christ for president, things like that. So it is a good question. What is he doing today that is talked about and answered on the Key of David program? Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Brent Noctegal. He was here today filling in for Stephen Fleury in Edmond, Oklahoma, right where we are in the studio, and talked about a few things regarding the Middle East. One of them, Iran continuing to push at the U.S. in the Middle East, especially in some strategic sea lanes. So there is a lot going on there. He talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and he had some updates on that program, or on that topic, I guess, on today's program, and a few other things as well. So make sure you listen for that, Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And if you can't catch it live, you can always catch the replay here on KPCG, or you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Greetings, I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life, and in our next episode, we will explore repertoire for a single instrument that is usually grouped with other instruments. Solo repertoire for violins, cellos, flutes, and even the solo voice. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we will discuss two examples of powerful solo performances that the Bible records as achieving some supernatural results. And in our Classroom Corner, we will discuss the value of isolating elements to make for more effective practicing. All this on our next episode of Music for Life, Music for One.
This Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by as well. Hello, Abraham.
Hello.
You have an interesting story. It ties into the topic on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, and that is about the Iranian connection to the Houthis, that rebel group. What are the details?
Yeah, this is from the Daily Star from Lebanon, so it's a local source there in the Middle East. And this is a U.S. admiral. He said that since April 2015, U.S. Navy and other allied navies have intercepted 4 weapon shipments from Iran to Yemen. So just in a year and a half, they've intercepted 4 weapon shipments. And of course, the Houthis are the group who have fired those anti-ship rockets at the U.S. warships there in the Gulf of Aden near the Red Sea. And so this is a lot of hard proof that the Houthis, who have, they're a rebel group, and they've been fighting the Yemen government, that they're getting all their heavy weapons from Iran, all their more sophisticated weaponry. And this is obviously very significant, because you have this group basically declaring war on the U.S. Navy by firing anti-ship weapons at them. But all their weapons are coming from Iran, which is apparently an American ally.
Right.
So it does complicate things a little bit, at least for an administration who is trying to make Iran look like an ally.
Yeah, and that's, I think on the Trump Daily program this morning, Brent Noctegal, he even reads a comment from a few months back. Somebody was talking about an article where they were making the connection between Iran and these rebels, and they were saying that's ridiculous. That's just completely, you know, false. So there has been that idea that there's no connection there, but clearly there's a massive connection.
Yeah, I mean, and they're both Shiite. That's the main connection, is also the religious ideology. But I think there's even another layer to this, which I think is really interesting, and that's that these anti-ship weapons, they're C-802 anti-ship missiles, and they are of Chinese origin. So they're manufactured in China, they're Chinese technology, and these are the ones that Iran. Most likely, we don't know if these missiles exactly came from Iran, but there's overwhelming evidence that they did, that they're from China. And so I think this is interesting because the two big weapon suppliers of Iran is, the biggest one is Russia. But you also have China having a lot of investment into Iran. And so you can even see a military relationship develop between Iran, China, and Russia. And selling China and Russia having a market to sell their weapons to Iran, then now these weapons are being deployed against the U.S. forces internationally.
And that's a very nerve-wracking precedent when you consider the nuclear capability of Russia. And I'm not so much sure about China, but I'm sure they're in the mix there somewhere. But and Iran working very hard to get those weapons, or maybe have them already, we don't know. But when you see them working together on things like this, and then, of course, I mean, you know, Russia and China, them, yeah, they're happy to sell their weapons, and they're also happy to have really a rogue nation, I suppose, use them against the U.S., and then they can just sit back and not be directly involved. But they are using Iran to put pressure on Iran's using the Houthis to put pressure on the U.S., so it's just kind of this chain reaction.
Yeah, exactly. This is, I mean, to me, it's somewhat reminiscent of the Cold War, because doesn't matter what nation the U.S. was fighting, they always had AK-47s and Russian-made weapons they were fighting against. And so you have Iran using a proxy group, the Houthis, to try to disrupt the trade through the Gulf of Aden, because the Gulf of Aden, it's the key way to get to the Suez Canal. And this article, there's another one from Foreign Policy, they make an interesting point. The Houthis don't really have the ability to completely shut down the strait there leading to the Suez Canal. But even if they make it more dangerous, insurance rates for these shipping companies will skyrocket, and they'll be forced to go through the Cape round the Horn of Africa, because of the insurance will be so high they don't want to risk it. And so even if they can't close it down, they could significantly alter shipping through the Suez Canal, which is the major artery for Europe and Southeast Asia. So this is a huge threat, and it's really being propagated by Iran, because this exponentially increases their power, but also falls into the hands of China and even Russia. They can put pressure on Europe to get what they want from them and the United States, and it really helps China solidify trading rights in the South China Sea, and even by proxy and not directly related in near the entrance of the Suez Canal.
It's a battle going on for waterways, because they are very important, very strategic, and be interesting to see if the U.S. really puts their resources into keeping those lanes open and keeping control of them. We haven't had much of a response yet. I mean, I guess at some point the response has to be more significant. You'd have to kind of go after the nations that are funding this and supporting this, I guess specifically Iran at this point. But that's a big task. It doesn't seem like we're wanting to do that.
Yeah, that's the biggest question from this, is how will the U.S. react? Because that we have fired, we have attacked Houthi positions. They destroyed some radar on the Yemeni coast. But it cost the U.S. Navy $8 million to fight back against some Houthi rebels firing some rockets. And that's a huge cost. So it is a very difficult situation. And because you really are opposing Iran in doing this, but it is a key sea gate. So this is really, I think, one of the first battles we'll see of U.S. Naval power at these key sea gates. And if the U.S. backs down, they give it to someone else to keep control, especially with a president who might be a little more isolationist, who would be more inclined to withdraw those Navy forces. It could just be really interesting to see how long the U.S. wants to stay in harm's way.
Yeah, that's kind of the time that we're in right now, where the U.S. could intervene and change some things, like, say, Syria, these sea lanes. We could still do that. We do have more power than the other side does. But the longer we wait, the harder it gets. And then eventually you can't do anything about it. I mean, though it's not easy to fight off these attacks, it does cost money. How much harder would it be if you had no access to those and you had to fight your way back into them? You know, like if we just kind of relinquish control. So that's the time we're in where we could do something, but nothing really of significance is happening. And every day that goes by, it gets harder and harder, and the challenge gets bigger and bigger on the other side.
Yeah, exactly. And if the U.S. loses control of these sea gates, who's to say that they'll ever be allowed to use them again from any nation they give it to? And but yeah, you're exactly right. And that's a big challenge for the military technology and the strategies we have for the U.S. is because either it's overwhelming force or they don't do anything at all. There's really no good in-between route that the U.S. Army or Navy has found. With modern technology, you either go in with overwhelming force and defeat the enemy. There's really no place for the grade of weapons that we have to find the middle road where, yeah, we try to deter them, but we actually don't go in. With the expenses and just the firepower involved, you have to go in and go in for total victory. That's what we saw in the Gulf War. Even 2003 in Iraq, we used overwhelming force, but we didn't really have a plan for afterwards. So really, if the U.S. wants to, the whole military system is designed just to take out the head and then very quickly. That's the doctrine of military strategy now. So if really the options are for the U.S. is take out the rebels or conversely attack Iran or the source, or they have to go into this holding pattern where their ships are under attack because they don't really have a good second option. So it's really puts America in a catch-22. And I guess the biggest problem is you have an administration who is ideologically opposed to using military force internationally.
It's going to be interesting. There is more information about that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today as well. So it's a really important topic. It's a good time to get a map and check out your geography, see where everything is, and then maybe make it a little more realistic, figure out what comes through there that you like to buy. And then you realize how important it is. Abraham, thanks for stopping and bringing that information to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we are online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, at KPCGFM. We'll send out some tweets occasionally. And also, you can send us any comments, questions, or concerns you have to comments at kpcg.fm. We always appreciate those, and we're happy to look at those for you. I'm Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon here with me again today. Really interesting story here you have, Grant. This is from Breitbart. The title is Triggered, Journalist Snowflakes Scared Trump Supporters Are Turning on the Media. Of course, they're using some of those key phrases that are popular nowadays. Triggered, meaning that you're offended by a word or an action, and a snowflake, meaning that you can't handle any sort of pressure on any level. So they say, triggered, journalist snowflake scared Trump supporters are turning on the media. What does Breitbart have to say?
This is a really funny article, and it points out the media rush to act afraid of Trump supporters. It's pretty clear that they don't really feel too threatened, but it's the popular thing, so they're all jumping on the bandwagon here. They're saying how they've been treated so poorly at these Trump rallies, even though they routinely misrepresent Trump supporters as racists, fascist Nazis, or disenchanted working whites.
Yeah, for sure. I think there was a story a while back about how even, I don't know if it was the journalists, but it was some people that were going to these different rallies that were pro-Trump rallies and trying to incite problems so they could quickly report on it, whether social media or whatever, and say, hey, look what they did, you know, by constantly going after them. And so I think there is that feeling. Certainly if people are reading what the media writes, they can see as well as anybody that they are really painting every Trump supporter as, like you say, racist, et cetera, et cetera. They have a lot of terms out there. What was the Hillary Clinton one? Deplorables, a basket of deplorables. So that's something that people don't like, surprisingly. They don't want to be called the basket of deplorables.
Right, and it's amazing because pretty much the only people who have gotten physically attacked at a Trump rally were the ones who were paid to go in there and stir up problems. No one else. I think one guy got punched in the face after I think he physically initiated a confrontation with somebody and then got punched in the face. That might be the only example out of all of these rallies where anything violent has happened. And yet they're portraying these Trump mobs or rallies as these violent, crazy mobs.
Well, and I've seen plenty of footage of the other side being pretty violent as well.
I'd say more so.
More so, I would think, too, just from what I've seen anyway, and being pretty outlandish. But it's not really being reported unless, you know, somebody happens to be there and they record it on their phone and whatever. I mean, really, I guess everybody would be smarter just to stay away from the rallies that they don't support, because it can get nasty. And but again, it is being amplified, certainly in one side, really making the Trump supporters look exceptionally bad and kind of ignoring the other side. At least that's what it seems, according to the way the media has been reporting it.
It is definitely unfair reporting when it comes to them portraying one side as unruly and dangerous while, you know, painting the other side as a sophisticated, correct people. So this article even says Trump supporters endure long waits, messy parking, and often obstructed view seating to rally for their candidate. The press, on the other hand, is given their own entrance, sectioned off seating, and protection from event security and the Secret Service. So they have it better even at the rallies than the people going there to support the candidate. But because a few people jeer at them and call them prostitutes, then the press is really saddened by this, and they believe that Trump is a permanent long-term threat to free speech and the job of the media, even though they are their own biggest threat because they have completely sacrificed all of their credibility during this election.
Yeah, absolutely. They've sacrificed all of their credibility. They've come out and said, some have, that they're very purposefully, you know, going to go after Trump and try to take him down. And so people aren't going to respond to that. They don't, you know, nobody wants to be lectured constantly on the op-ed pages or the front pages of some of these different magazines or papers. And so I think the thing they're worried about is that their ideology, people may not agree with it. And that's the thing that worries them more than anything else. Because there's sort of like this sense of elitism, that they're elite and they're in the know and they know what's right. And I have read that where there are reports from people that have been in the press or are working with the press that say they think they know better than everyone else, and that's why they, you know, write their stories the way that they write them. Granted, they've all come out of the same cookie-cutter universities, so they have the exact same ideologies usually, which are very radical, left, and they think they're smarter than everybody in a lot of cases. So that's why they don't feel bad about telling, you know, ignorant common man how to vote and how to think. That's not the place of journalism, though.
Right, and there's that wonderful book called Bias that I'm reading right now. I don't know if you've seen that, but it does talk about a lot of the same things where the average journalist is just totally out of touch with reality because he surrounds himself with a circle of intellectual, high-minded people who have all the same beliefs as him. And so he doesn't realize that there are people out there, and in fact, the majority of America a lot of the time, that doesn't believe with his ideals. So he can present his slant to the news and genuinely think that it's a moderate tone because everyone he knows agrees with him. So then it just becomes like it's fact because he has no one dissenting with him among his inner circle.
Yeah, that's the echo chamber, right, that Ben Rhodes bragged about, that's been talked about here not too long ago, about the Iran deal, how they just kept throwing things out. And so it became its own echo chamber. So whatever they said, the media parroted it. And there was just, they wrote their own narrative. They wrote their own fiction and passed it off as a fact when in fact it really was just fiction. So I'm kind of surprised in a way that, say, if you were a journalist and you had the current administration and you had Ben Rhodes come out and just basically laugh and say, yeah, we have them do whatever we want, that wouldn't make them a little upset and say, hey, wait a second here. You know, you're not going to treat us that way. But apparently they haven't been upset about that.
Yeah, they're getting punked and clowned by this administration, and yet there's still shameless shills of the Obama administration and now even the Hillary campaign. It just never stops with these people. There's an amazing quote that I read, and it goes something like, in terms of arrogance and a lack of accountability, only a lawyer can rival a journalist. And that is true, because who is to say a lot of the time if anything a journalist says is true, whenever they can cite unnamed sources or they can basically skew facts in any direction, and only people who research into it for hours could verify if what you said was true. The journalists don't really have too much accountability, especially now when it seems like they're all geared up on the same side. Who's going to check them? They get upset when Donald Trump calls people out. They have repeatedly mischaracterized and distorted things that he's said. There have been obviously the repeated line is that he thinks all Mexicans are rapists and that all women are pigs. He never said anything close to those things. Well, I actually went back and I watched that part of the speech where he was talking about illegal immigration, and he said, first of all, it's important to point out that they're not all Mexicans. They're coming from all parts of Central and South America and even the Middle East. So right there, he's not even talking about Mexicans anymore. And then he says, there are so many good immigrants who come here legally, who keep the laws and contribute to this nation. Then he said, there are even some illegal immigrants who don't cause much trouble once they're here. There are some really good people who come in illegally, but among those are some rapists and some criminals and some murderers. It doesn't characterize the entire group. This is nearly word for word the things he was saying in that speech. And what they go back and say is that Donald Trump thinks all Mexicans, which he wasn't talking about Mexicans, are rapists. And that is not even close to what he said. That is completely a lie. It's a shameful lie, and it's what the media has been basically perpetuating this entire time.
Well, I think it's a good point you brought out about there should be some responsibility in journalism. I mean, if you're given a platform to say something or to write something, and it's a big platform, there should be some responsibility there to present the facts as much as possible. And I don't know, I guess maybe there's a feeling that doesn't matter. And I think that's been kind of the thinking even with some of the politicians, where the result is more important than how you get there. So they think, well, we need to, say, pass health care or whatever, so we'll just lie about it to get it. It doesn't matter. And I think there might be that same thinking within the journalistic community of like, well, it doesn't matter what we say as long as we get the result we want at the end. And, of course, inevitably, what do? You end up making fiction, lying, because mm-hmm. that's the way to try to get there in a lot of cases. So, and it is interesting too, watching some of the debates in real time, and then also keeping up with some of the online networks and what they would, their live updates about it. They'd pick out little statements and put them up, and it was always, or in a lot of cases, out of context what was actually being said. But if you're not actually sitting there and watching it, you'd think, well, look at what was said here. And then the next day you'll have an article about that one statement. But it's all out of context.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are in the day and age where really you do have to put in a little bit of legwork on your own to figure out as much as you can what's actually going on to some extent.
Yeah, it's a shame that we have so many voters today who really don't do the work that it takes to become informed, it seems like, because they do just buy the media's lies, and they are lies. I mean, a lot of these things are just outrageous. You know, during one of the Republican debates, Fox News's Megyn Kelly went on and said, you characterize all women as pigs. And obviously, Trump went on to say that he was talking about one specific person. I've never heard him make a blanket statement saying he doesn't like women. He has said some things that are very blunt, where if you attack him, he'll attack you tenfold. But he's not attacking women who aren't attacking him first. That is pretty much the case every single time. And he doesn't say it against all women. But they think that, well, I guess there are some things that might indicate that he has a little bit less respect than he should at times, but it's not like he's come out and said that like they indicate. They do twist words, and they basically inject their own thoughts, which they view as facts, to the American people.
Yeah, and I think that one of the other things that's happening is because they're focusing so much on some of these statements, it's taking away from the real issues at hand.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, granted, if there are some wrong things said, then it should factor in. But how about the bigger issues at play here? You know, I don't really know much about the foreign policy of Donald Trump or much of anything, because they don't ever talk about it. All they talk about is these statements. You know, you mm-hmm. said this, you said that. So the media has a responsibility in really dumbing down this election, I think, and making it a name-calling back and forth. where if they focus more on the issues, it'd be more interesting, I think. And I was talking to someone recently who was overseas not too long ago, and it was interesting to get their perception on the election over here, or the campaigns over here, from, you know, a foreign press position. And they said, really, they just kind of laugh at us because it's a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the media over here has played a large part into making it a joke because, you know, if you attack a candidate, they kind of have to attack you back, don't they, unless they want to lose? So it becomes this name-calling thing, and where I don't think it even has to go there at all, and it could have focused more on the issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, another example of the press not really getting too deep into the issues, because I think if they do that, a lot of people would realize that a lot of these liberal policies have failed for decades. So they do try to pretty much put up these smoke screens. But what was the big story yesterday? It was that Trump took maybe an hour out of his busy campaign trail to go and open up a hotel in Washington, D.C., and he had three more speeches or something like that to give in the same day. Meanwhile, when Hillary Clinton takes 5 days off to prepare for one debate, they think it's a noble effort, and they don't say a single thing about her not visiting all the battleground states and giving speeches. You know, Trump is 70 years old, and he is literally going to four or five places a day giving speeches and making appearances, and he can't go to a huge hotel opening for 1 hour out of the day. And who even cares anyway? It's a hotel that he's opening. He is producing and building things, but the whole story is that he's not working hard enough, apparently, in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that is interesting. There was also another story today I saw briefly where I guess he has his own sort of like network he's got going.
He just made it on Facebook, I think.
Yeah. And so they were talking about how if you look at that, he says he's winning and all this stuff, and they're making a big joke about it. But that's just in response to every other media outlet basically saying that Hillary Clinton's winning, when in fact it's very close. But they're making it out like it's a landslide. And they have even found that that was part of the plan. Like, well, if we just say this enough, people will believe it.
That was released by yeah. WikiLeaks.
Right.
And I guess they think we're too dumb to ever read any of those WikiLeaks leaks, because they keep on saying, oh, she's won it. The election's over. He has no chance to get the 270 electoral votes that he needs. Yeah, but we saw in these leaked emails that it was your plan the whole time to just barrage us with all of these polls that would support the fact that they think Hillary Clinton's winning.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. We're not that far away from it all being over.
Let's just wait and see. Let's just wait and see who wins. Who cares about polls anyway? Well, I don't need to hear about 500 different polls when they all have different results.
You have to admit, though, isn't it going to be interesting? Like, if, let's say Donald Trump does win.
It's going to be hilarious.
Just to watch the media the next day.
They'll have a meltdown.
They're going to have a
meltdown. I don't think they'll show up to work.
No. It'll be just black. You'll turn on the station. There'll be nothing on the air.
They'll all move to Canada.
Because they've really thrown their whole energy and being behind him losing, and what if he doesn't? Mm-hmm. You know, not only is that maybe certainly a vote for him, but it's a vote against the media in a lot of ways. So it'll be interesting to see. And but again, thankfully that'll all be over soon, and then we can worry about the other things, like, oh, you know, foreign policy, economy, stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to wait till after someone's elected to even know what they would do with these things.
Well, hey,
the issues are still up in the air. We don't even really know specifically what either candidate would do, because they keep on bringing up all these distractions that really no one should care about that much.
Well, to sort of quote Nancy Pelosi there, we got to elect him to find out what they'll do.
Right.
That's what you said about the health care. We got to pass
exactly
it to find
right.
out what's in it. And then we found out, and it was horrible.
And they still are saying that it's going to be something like a 25% premium increase or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. But that's an interesting write-up at Breitbart. Triggered journalist snowflake scared Trump supporters are turning on the media. You can read the rest of it there if you'd like to. Trumpet Daily Radio Show is coming up here in a bit, and The Key of David as well. Make sure you listen for those. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live today. That'll do it for us. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.